Okay, our next case for argument is Salinger versus City of Springfield. Mr. Dean.
May it please the Court, Your Honors, Counselor. My name is Mark Dean. I am the attorney for Mary Salinger, the mother of the decedent, in this case, Andrew Salinger. And we're here on two issues that the District Court granted summary judgment on. One is whether the officers acted reasonably in providing medical care to Mr. Salinger after he was unconscious and after he was hogtied.
Can you tell us something about this jury trial? Has there been any appeal in that?
Your Honor, the jury trials occurred after summary judgment was granted. I was not attorney until the proceedings were here today about what happened in those jury trials. I believe one was on excessive force and one was on different issues, completely unrelated to the issues we're here today about.
Unrelated? I don't understand you. If the police officers were exonerated of any violation, how can the city be liable?
Well, if they have been exonerated of those issues, but what I'm bringing up today is that they have not been, if this court agrees to allow the court to go.
You can't split your claims like that. I don't understand.
If the district court improperly granted summary judgment.
Is that final? Is there final judgment in them?
There's final judgments on certain claims on the excessive force claims.
There was a verdict and a judgment entered. Was there a judgment entered on the verdict?
There was a judgment entered on the verdict.
Has there been an appeal from that judgment?
There wasn't an appeal on those judgments. There's an appeal pending before this court on the summary judgment issues.
Well, no kidding.
Okay.
What is this? But the jury. There are two jury trials.
The first one was on excessive force, and I believe there was a hung jury on the first jury trial as to one of the officers, and then it went to a second jury trial, and then there was a judgment on that second jury trial on the same excessive force claim.
It's one case, and that judgment has not been appealed, or has been.
That particular judgment has not been appealed.
Are you the lawyer in that case?
I was not the lawyer until this appeal. I was not the lawyer in the underlying jury trials or on any preceding matters before the district court.
But the judge said that Zimmerman, one of the officers, said he knew that, you know, you're supposed to turn the hobbled person on his side. And yet the jury exonerated Zimmerman. But what's left of your case?
Well, the jury didn't get into the failure to train case, the failure to train issue, and that's
But you don't need a training if the person knows, right? Right? If Zimmerman knows, he wasn't trained, but he knows. He knows you're supposed to turn the person on his side. It wasn't done. Nevertheless, the jury said no violation. So what's the relevance of failure to train?
Well, the jury wasn't considering the issues of failure to train.
What difference does it make? My point is, if someone has not received any training, but he knows what he would know if he had been trained, then what causal significance does the failure to train have?
Well, it's not clear that he knows what he would have known if he had been well-trained. Furthermore,
the only thing you're supposed to do is put the person on his side. What else is there?
Sergeant Zimmerman's testimony in his deposition is pretty much all over the map. At first he says, I don't know what a hobble is. I've never used one. Later he seems to know what to do after a hobble's been in place. I think that's a credibility question that goes to the jury.
What credibility question?
What kind of training he had.
He knows what you're supposed to do, and the jury lets him off anyway. The jury's decided there was no constitutional violation. And what? And if say if the people who caused the injury know what they would have learned in a training session, and the fact they weren't trained is irrelevant.
Well, there's no evidence.
It's a simple proposition, isn't it?
We don't know what the officers would have learned had they been well trained, and that's what the Supreme Court.
You have to put the person on his side, right? What else is there to learn?
Zimmerman did not say when you have to put him on his side. He basically didn't get into the full panoply of what you need to do when you put someone in a hog tie and what you need to do after.
Well, what else do you have to do?
Well, I think that's something that the jury has to decide. I think
you must have a notion.
I think one is that they immediately have to put him on his side, and there's testimony, there's evidence in this case is that they didn't do that. In fact, the dispatch records indicate that there was a 7-minute delay between the time he was unconscious and hogtied.
So was the jury told that these people did not administer this hobble restraint in a careful fashion? Were they told that?
I don't believe that issue was presented to the jury because it wasn't before the jury trial. The judge had already granted summary judgment on the training issues and on the.
I'm not talking about training. I'm saying was the jury told, not has nothing to do with training. Was it part of the jury case that these police officers did the wrong thing with the hobble restraint? Was that part of the case?
I don't believe that was part of the case.
I don't think you're right.
How could it not have been?
Because the district court judge has already granted summary judgment.
No, that's about training. It's not about what you're supposed to do with a hobble restraint. Training is just designed to bring in the city, to make the city liable. But surely the question whether they were mishandling this hobble restraint, that must have been central in the jury trial. That's why he died.
Is the 7-minute gap the only evidence we have? Or is there evidence about what actually transpired during that time period?
Well, the officers say it was less than a 7-minute gap, and that's where the disputed material issue of fact is on whether they administered medical care in a timely fashion, whether they acted reasonably.
Well, that was before the jury, wasn't it?
No, that issue was also dismissed prior to the jury trial on summary judgment, and that's why we're here today.
I thought you're talking about training. Now we're talking about the 7 minutes. What's the?
Yeah, I have two issues, and I believe Your Honor is talking about the reasonableness of the officer's actions following Mr. Salinger being hogtied and following him being unconscious. The dispatch records of the city of Springfield indicate that when Lieutenant Bridges was called, he was at another location. When he was called out to the scene at 2:15 a.m., the city has admitted that Salinger was unconscious at that time and unresponsive. When Bridges arrived at the scene, and the dispatch records indicate that was at 2:22 a.m., and when he got into the room where the altercation had taken place, Mr. Salinger was still hogtied, was still lying torso down, and was still unconscious. It was only at that time that the officers rolled him onto his side, took his pulse, and called for CPR. And I think that's where the disputed issue of fact is on the medical care issue, because the dispatch records are an objective piece of evidence that say there was a 7-minute gap here. What happened during that 7-minute time frame? The city has testimony that it was a much less amount of time, but you know, that's a classic disputed material fact issue that needs to be determined.
Is it clear from the dispatch records that that this conversation that was occurring over the radio was all about this case?
I think it is clear. I think it says a disturbance at the actual residence, which was somewhere on East Dale, and he was called at 2:15, and the dispatch records indicate he arrived at 2:22, 7 minutes later.
But the remark over the dispatch about white male, late 30s, unconscious, unresponsive, is it clear that that we're talking about this case, or is this just an ongoing dispatch tape where there are multiple calls coming in?
The city has admitted that he was responding to the dispute out at the Salinger residence. So it is clear that they were talking about Mr. Salinger being unconscious and unresponsive at 2:15 a.m.
So that's been stipulated, too?
I believe so, Your Honor.
I don't understand. You have the only defendant before us now is the city, right?
No, all three officers are also before the court.
You have a brief. You say City of Springfield defendant appellee. You don't say there are multiple defendants.
I believe in the text of the brief.
In the statement of issues presented for review, did the district court correctly rule, etc., no material fact, that it was appropriate to enter summary judgment in favor of the City of Springfield? I don't see where. I thought the individuals were taken care of in the jury case.
Well, the district court granted the individual summary judgment on whether they acted reasonably in providing medical care to Mr. Salinger after he became unresponsive and unconscious and was in a hogtie position.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And Mr. Martinez?
The red brief does say at all.
Pardon?
The red brief does say right. At all. Could I ask you something real quickly, Mr. Martinez?
Certainly.
Does the fact that your brief is entitled City of Springfield, Illinois, et al., are the et al. The police officers?
Yes, they are. That's in the failure to train, or I'm sorry, the failure to provide medical care claim. May it please the court, I'm Frank Martinez. I represent the City of Springfield. To respond to an earlier question the court posed, as far as the two jury trials went, on October 3, 2007, a jury found in favor of defendants Brian Oakes and James Zimmerman for the following counts: count 1, excessive force claim; count 2, assault and battery claim; and count 3, use of deadly force. The jury was unable to come to a unanimous verdict as it relates to defendant Jason Oliver. A mistrial was declared as it relates to defendant Oliver only. Second trial was held on October 7, 2008. During that trial, defendant Jason Oliver, a jury found him in his favor for the following counts: again, count 1, excessive force; count 2, assault and battery claim; and count 3, unlawful use of deadly force. I want to address this notion about a 7-minute delay. There was no 7-minute delay. If you look at the dispatch transcripts and the dispatch record, you will find that at 2:15 that Officer Brian Oakes called for another unit. It is at that time, at 2:15, that dispatch was summoning other units to the scene. At 2:20 p.m., when Sergeant Daly arrived, he is the one that called for an ambulance. He said, 10:52, ambulance, 10:18 immediately.
So there's a 5-minute delay?
There was no delay whatsoever.
When was an ambulance? I don't understand. When was an ambulance first called?
At 2:20.
But why isn't that 5 minutes late?
Because you're assuming at 2, or I guess the plaintiffs are assuming at 2:15 that there was a need for medical attention. But at 2:20 is when Mr. Salinger was unresponsive and it was unconscious.
Well,
not
when
at 2:15.
Was he hobbled?
He was hobbled because he was.
When was he hobbled?
That is not clear exactly the precise time in the record. It was anywhere between the time the last officer, Officer Oliver, arrived, which I believe was around 204 to 207 until 220. But there is evidence that prior to the hobble, prior to these officers arriving, these backup officers, that's when the hobble was administered, because the hobble was administered and then all these other backup officers arrived. The court asked about whether there was evidence about the hobble. There was extensive evidence in the both trials about the use of the hobble and whether the hobble was applied properly and whether Zimmerman and the actions of the officers that were at the scene. I would agree that I will start with the failure to provide medical care claim first, since the city, as the court has pointed out, cannot be liable on the failure to train theory unless there's a finding that the individual officers are liable under substantive claims. Because there's no constitutional violations for the failure to provide medical care, it is unnecessary to consider whether defendants Oakes, Oliver, and Zimmerman were adequately trained. Regardless, it is the position that there was adequate, and in fact, there was a tremendous amount of medical care given to Mr. Salinger once he became unresponsive and quit breathing. I think what we need to look...
Once he's dead?
No. No, no.
Well, when you stop breathing, you're dead.
Well, that's when he went into whatever his condition was, whether he went into arrest, whether he stopped breathing, whatever. You still have a window of time to try to save the person, and that's what they were trying to do. Once that came to their attention, that Mr. Salinger was no longer responsive, they checked him right away. They started performing CPR. They took the hobble off. The officers, Zimmerman, started chest compressions. Officer Oakes ran out to his car and got a CPR mask for Sergeant Daly to use. Sergeant Keene arrives. Sergeant Keene is a certified paramedic. He starts working on Mr. Salinger. And at that point, not only do they call for an ambulance, they are continuing asking dispatch, where is this ambulance? We need the ambulance right away. So everything medically possible that those officers could have done when Mr. Salinger was no longer responsive was being conducted by those at the scene. As it relates to the failure to train claim, there is nothing in the record to show the causation. As the court has already pointed out, Sergeant Zimmerman knew that it was imperative that when you have someone in a prone type of position, that they are put on their side and that they are allowed to breathe. In addition, if you look at the autopsy report from Dr. Harshbarger, there were underlying conditions that Mr. Salinger was had a clinical history of. There were mental illness. There was the enlarged heart, cardiomegaly, fatty liver, and obesity, as well as the excited delirium.
Do you know how much he weighed?
262 pounds. He was 5'10". His heart was 550 milligrams. A normal heart is 350 milligrams. I believe if you look at Dr. Harshbarger's testimony, he also testifies that that in itself, with exertion, could cause an arrhythmia.
Counsel, Mr. Dean said that there was a stipulation that this dispatch, white male, late 30s, unconscious, unresponsive, was referring to Mr. Salinger and was in the course of one continuing radio exchange between the officers at the scene and the dispatchers. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. The copy of the transcript of the dispatch tape that I have doesn't have times on it to indicate the times of each of these communications.
Right.
The plaintiff is maintaining, apparently, that that particular exchange of information was at 2:15.
Right.
Is that stipulated as well?
No, because it happened at 2:20. If you look at the transcript records, And you also look at the dispatch record, it will show a 220 SP or S10, who is Officer Daly, is the person who calls that in, and he arrives at the scene at 220.
Okay, so that's a separate dispatch record than what was made an exhibit to Sergeant Zimmerman's deposition?
No. There's two dispatch records. There's this one that you're holding in your hand, and there's also one from the Illinois State Police. They pretty much coincide.
Except one doesn't have times.
Neither of them have times. What you have to look at, you have to look at the dispatch records, and it'll tell you when officers are arriving. And we know that the person who said that Mr. Salinger was unresponsive was Sergeant Daly. And if you look at the dispatch records, it'll show that he arrives at 2:20. So that's how we know that at 2:20 is when he called that in.
How do we know it was Sergeant Daly? Because there's question marks next to this line
on the
dispatch.
No, I think if you look, it's not undisputed. If you look at the deposition that Lieutenant Bridges gives, they're asking him, who are these people, and who's S-10, who's Sam-10, and that is Sergeant Daly. That's never been in dispute who that is. And I think if you also look at the ISP records as well, you'll find that.
Except there is no S-10 or other designation next to this line item in the dispatch tape transcript. There's just two question marks.
Well, if you look at the ISP, I'll see if I can.
There's some more definitive
designation? Yeah.
It was very unclear to me.
Okay, if you look at page 7, at least my copy is clear. On page 7, it's Zimmerman's Deposition Exhibit 1. It says S-10 Dispatch, S-10 Start 10:52, 10:18. And S-10 is Sergeant Daly.
That's exactly what I'm looking at, page 7.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And the white male, late 30s, unconscious, unresponsive, has two question marks next to it in my copy. Is that what your copy shows?
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. You're right. Okay, you're looking below that.
Well, this is the sort of smoking gun.
No, that would be someone who was at the scene said that. They don't know who exactly said that because dispatch is asking what the nature of the injuries are. We have to speculate.
That's the point, though. And that is at 2:15, and we don't know who's saying it.
No. That has to be after 2:20 because that's S-10 is Sergeant Daly, and the records show that he arrives at 2:20.
Okay.
If you look at Sergeant Daly's where they have him dispatched when he arrives on the scene, it'll show he arrives at 2:20. So we know that that conversation occurred after 2:20.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Martinez. So, Mr. D, your time had expired, but we'll give you another minute if something of...
I'll just point out that the dispatch records, I believe, are a little clearer to see at number 86. I don't know if that's what you're looking at, but I believe if you look at those dispatch records in toto, and based on the testimony of Sergeant Daly, he said he arrived about the same time as Lieutenant Bridges. There is a disputed fact as to whether they were called out at 2:15. Mr. Martinez is saying it's 2:20, but I think the dispatch records indicate that there is at least a 5 to 7 minute gap in between the time Mr. Salinger was unconscious and unresponsive, between the time he was taken off the bed and unhobbled. Because even Sergeant Zimmerman says it was about the time that Bridges was there that I checked for his pulse and I took him off the bed and started these other resuscitation efforts.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case.